Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting. Hello! It's the Big Show. We're here to discuss the week's technology news in depth, as it may be, as it may not be, because it's all good, don't forget. But we have got 75 odd stories we can choose from. And joining me to discuss this fantastic week in technology, I've got a great panel. Stop left, welcome back from his hotel room in Manchester. Alright, mate, is Mr. James Hart. How you doing, pal?
Kid. We'll have no trouble here.
Anyway, so how's it going, mate?
Yes, well, thank you very much indeed. I've been composing interview questions today over a nice burger at the the Hungry Horse. Why the Hungry Horse, you may ask? One, it's cheap and you can eat a lot of it.
I was just going to say
two, the food comes quickly, and it means I can get back to my hotel room in time for the show. So all is well.
How is life in Media City, old boy?
Oh, I love it up here. The people are so much friendlier. The girls are prettier, and it's generally less of a media place than London.
Don't tell your wife that, eh? That's a good fella. Next to him, a last minute replacement. Thank you ever so much, Mr. Fox. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well reading the Google Doc while we speak.
Yeah, stop interrupting.
I'm very well prepared.
Stop reading my preparation and move on to Sarah. How are you doing, girl?
Yeah, I'm fine, thank you.
Excellent. Yes. All right, that's fair enough. last but by no means least, from Petaluma with his fruited beverage, no sugar added, Mr. Eric Lanigan. How you doing, mate?
Hello. Now, I'm only on story about 5 out of 107, so can we just pause the show a minute and let me catch up?
I wouldn't mind, but I sent it yesterday.
It's so many stories to read.
That's the great excuse. That's the brilliant excuse, because last night I finished it, and I sent it to everybody, and I sent it to him yesterday. Whether I did it today or not. The week in technology, what's been happening? Tech Radar came out with a fantastic, gadget. Normally, when you do back to school, it's like the new pencils and pens and bags that are available. And then it was on to the new phones that were available. And then it was on to the new laptops and iPads that were available. And gadget's gone one better. They've got a back to school list for HD TVs, which I think's amazing. I mean, and there's 50-inch panels in there.
Yeah, it'll be $1,600.
You're picking off the kids and sending them back to college with a 50-inch flat panel.
Well, it's safe from spending their student loan on it.
You kids don't know you're born.
Absolutely.
That was the easy line.
Do you know how much my first university computer cost? £20.
Really?
It was a hand-me-down VT220 terminal that I got off the computer department and connected into a serial link.
By RS-232 port.
RS-423, it was balanced. It was, and I used to sort of play, it was just text. It was all text back then.
What was the proper name for, do you remember LPT1? That link? That was LPT1 was the proper name for it.
Line printer.
That's where it standard. That's what it stood for.
I cleared out an office. One of the companies I worked for, their departments had moved office, and I got a few cables down there that I cleared out from a desk. And when I was in the desk, I found an LPT1 to USB cable. And I thought about nicking it and keeping it, because I don't think they want it, but just as a posterity thing, that'd be cool.
Every cable I've ever bought, I have about 5 filing cabinets full of them.
Oh. Was it the just in case?
Most people do it, Max.
Centronics one, Ewan, or was it the?
The big. It was a real big wide chubby with, you know, there was teeth along it. I thought it was going to bite me at one point.
Yeah, that sounds like the Centronics one.
Yeah, well, my Centronics SCSI cable, I could just about get my hand around it. It's that thick.
Oh, blimey! The other thing, Galaxy Samsung Galaxy. They've released the new tablet, the 10-inch tablet, and they've also managed to let us know that they've sold 10 million Galaxy Notes, which I was quite astounded at that, to be honest. And I know it's quite popular, and I walked past the shop the other day, and I said to the wife, I said, does that appeal to you? And she said, not at all. And I said, because there's a lot of people I think it does appeal to.
Yeah, me too.
Mm. I described it as a handbag phone, so that might be disrespectful to a few guys that have bought it. Google is expecting you to hack Chrome, and if you hack Chrome and you do well, instead of calling the police and getting you arrested, they're going to give you $2 million. Well done. And finally, late story added by Mr. Ian Grant. Thank you very much, mate. This is the Commonwealth Bank in Australia. They've done an SCCM task sequence, thanks to HP, and it's wrecked their entire system. So, if you're in the chat room, if you bank with these people, well, never mind, mate. There's always a bit more work to do.
NatWest all over again, isn't it?
I was going to say, it's all the banking disasters, it's out to the pile.
It's an HP patch, and apparently Meg Whitman has become Batman/Superman. She has boarded the private jet, and she is on her way to Australia as we speak, trying to sort it
out. Or to reinstall everything manually herself. Yeah. Stick the flops, the USB stick in.
There's an HP patch. Is that to try and wean you off HP slowly? Do you put one on your arm?
Literally.
If you did, I'll get the chief exec down there to sit in front of the server and play with the settings. That's always going to sort things out, isn't it?
If anyone can solve it, Meg can.
Should have had a time machine backup. It'd been all right, wouldn't it?
Right then. Shall we start off with the story, Sarah, that you said you quite fancied talking about? And this is, I think this is quite a bit of an earthquake to a certain degree, potentially. Flash is no more on Android. It's been removed. Android have said that they're not going to create any new versions. They're pulling it from the store. If you haven't already got it installed, bad luck if you're on Android. There will be no more Flash for Android. Sarah, you went to talk about this, so you start us off. What are you?
Yeah, I was quite shocked by this, because and there seems to have been quite a bit of uproar, because yes, they've had a long-standing intention to withdraw it. It's been well known, but my understanding is that they've actually pulled it this early because of problems with it with Jelly Bean, and certainly with, as I've been very vocal of saying, I've had a number of issues with other applications with Jelly Bean, which just don't seem to want to work properly. So I'm guessing that it is a real issue for Adobe, and they've just decided, right, okay, fine, let's just call it quits now. But you've got the likes of the BBC that use Flash Player, which is causing, you know, them a real problem. And I don't know whether James can shed any light on this one, but
the British Tech Network uses Flash as well, for heaven's sake.
Well absolutely.
Indeed. But obviously, you know, I mean, you know, much as I, you know, would love to say that, but you know, obviously the BBC iPlayer is used by slightly more people, fortunately.
Well, the aim is to go obviously to HTML5, but what interests me is the fact that Adobe Air has never really taken off. Adobe Air was supposed to be the desktop platform for media delivery. Flash is absolutely rubbish at it. It's just a fact. Flash just can't do it. Economically or sort of efficiently, and that's what Air was intended to do. You've got something like your Twitter client runs on there, and that's about it. They've missed a trick. Adobe have not got in there and replaced it with anything decent, and all that's happened now is there's been a vacuum.
Yeah, I mean, I actually think this is quite interesting, because if you think about Steve Jobs, his view about not porting Flash, you know, this really could accelerate the move towards HTML5 and then the adoption of it. And you know, we're getting more and more companies and sites that are actually adopting it, but this could actually take a big leap forward. And I know I was at the time when Steve actually announced this, I actually, for what, you know, as everyone knows, I'm not particularly an Apple fan, but I praised him for this, because it was a great way of actually getting HTML5 to move forward fast, and it seems to be happening, which is fantastic.
So do you think that Steve Jobs win for his market might, or did he win, or was it an actual prediction? Was it a self-fulfilling prophecy, or did he make it actually happen?
I wasn't totally sure about his reasons for it, and I didn't necessarily believe it, because I know that there were some issues about, he said that apparently it was Flash caused some issues with the battery life and so on and so forth.
CPU hungry.
Yeah, and there was also some commercial issues between Apple and Adobe, which I think might have also been behind the decision. However, the impact of it, even before it, you know, as soon as that was announced, I could just see the huge impact that was going to have.
I think,
you know, if we now say that Flash is now no longer available on Android and iOS, that effectively kills most of Flash from...
Well, Flash was never available on iOS anyway. So
that's what I'm saying. I mean,
but that's the interesting point, I think, because if you look at the chat room's comments, you know, there's quite a few people have launched into ABC, and in Oz is a catch-up, says Pete, with a Flash-based service, but now they've got a prepared iOS app, which works just fine. So there's been the migration away from Flash. But I just want to throw a curveball in maybe to the conversation. Through the Olympics coverage, I was trying to use Safari and look at the BBC's website, which supports Safari and HTML5, and the coverage was crap. I mean, effectively, when every time I tried to start it, I'd get 3 or 4 minutes of playback and then it'd crash and I'd get like a rainbow across the screen. And I found, as a result of that, Google's Chrome as a browser, downloaded that, started that up, and that ran absolutely seamlessly, and it's perfect.
That's a really funny thing about it, is because Google's Chrome was one of the first browsers, as I recall, to come with Flash installed on it.
Exactly.
Yeah, I was going to say it actually has Flash actually built into it. So the only thing, you don't have to install it separately.
Will the time come when Google stops installing Flash by default on Chrome? And that's going to be an interesting tipping point as well, potentially.
Well, no. Here's my point: is this a response to the fact that the Chrome browser does it all anyway? So Adobe doesn't need to operate and develop anymore. That's why it's pulled away from Android, because Chrome just seems to do it better. And it does. I mean, the iOS app runs beautifully, and it deals with web content from places. Not a single crash the whole way through watching Olympics coverage on the BBC website on Chrome. Absolute dog on Safari.
I mean, this is an interesting aspect, because obviously, you know, I mean, I've got Chrome installed on my Nexus S running Android Jelly Bean. And if it's come, if you know, if they're going to say, because Adobe have said that they want to concentrate on the desktop market and also the high end stream delivery, so you like Netflix and so on and so forth, and actually pump out, you know, that's where they put their efforts. But obviously, you know, if you've got Flash actually installed in Chrome on your desktop but not on your mobile, that's going to cause some real issues.
But here's the thing, Sarah. This is a real leap of faith for you to do if you don't want to do it. I fully understand. But if you took Flash off your Android phone and the Google browser ran, the Google browser would just perform just fine without, because it deals with, the Google browser deals with, now whether it's doing it with Flash or whether it's doing it with HTML5, I don't know, but it deals with Flash content perfectly fine.
There might be some confusion here, because the reason that Chrome on the desktop comes with Flash goes back to Google wanting to bolster the Android platform and highlighting its, at the time that they made the deal, its biggest feature over iOS, which was the fact that it had Adobe Flash on it.
Yeah.
So Google switched gears from saying, we're all into HTML5 and open web standards, to then suddenly they had this phone.
Well, didn't they have WebM, though? They backed WebM as well.
Right. I mean, Google was all for HTML5. They were all for open standards. I mean, no one thought, you know, you had Apple and Microsoft turning their backs on Adobe Flash, which I think no one expected, and Google embracing it. It was exactly the opposite of what you'd expect. So now that they've abandoned the Android platform, why should Google continue to bundle and install their own custom version of Flash in the desktop version of Chrome? I don't think they will. But I think there are other, but what to what you were saying, I don't think the Android or any mobile version of Chrome comes with Flash. I think that it's just a, the reason the desktop one comes with it, it's the full version of Flash, but they just custom build it and massage it and work it into the underlying code of the Chrome instead of using the overall desktop installation of it, I think.
Okay.
Right. So it's just a sandbox within the app.
Yeah.
And it's not,
on the mobile app. And this is the critical part of it, is the fact that if you do want to consume any content, and that goes from your handheld phone to a 10-inch tablet, and that is a fairly hefty piece of consume. You know, I'm running a netbook here which runs less than 10 inches screen width. You cannot run Flash content on it. And one of the reasons you can't do it is because it simply doesn't work properly. Even on a quad-core box, it probably used most of the CPU trying to run. And it's interesting that HTML5 just doesn't seem fully cooked yet. It's although Steve Jobs, you're absolutely right, Sarah, tried to accelerate it, it hasn't been forced into this position yet.
Uptake is beyond, I would say, you know, slow. It's poor.
Yeah, but I think this might actually accelerate it.
But the tipping point, I think, will be when you... Well, this is a really interesting one because YouTube has its own app and therefore it delivers content through an H.264 stream. However, YouTube can also deliver HTML5 content. You know, you could, but you have to opt into it. By default, yeah. YouTube displays Flash. It's really weird that Google are being quite duplicitous about this. For the desktop market, they're sticking with Flash, and for the mobile market, they're going, "Oh, we're going to pull away from this." And it's kind of like, "Well, do one thing or the other."
That's what Adobe have said that they're doing. They're still going to provide it for the desktop environment. So maybe that's why Google have made that decision.
Yeah, remember the one thing keeping Flash employed in most websites is encoded rights protected video streaming. HTML5 does not have that yet. At the very least, there has been no standard that anyone agrees on yet. So that's the big reason that you still see Google. They'd love to go to HTML5 or to WebM, I'm sure. But, well, that's kind of the same thing, I guess. H.264 or WebM, I should say. But they have to have some way to sell movies and do encrypted streams and private streams and all this stuff they want to do with YouTube and monetization, selling content from the big studios, you know, stuff that it has to be rights protected. And there just is no way yet to do that with the HTML5 standard or any just codecs that are on the market or video wrappers. You have to use that encryption in Flash. So what I'd like to see is something to come along to replace that. Maybe Google will write it themselves and provide it and offer it up as a free international standard. Who knows, like they did with WebM. But right now, that's the one thing that will be the nail in Flash's coffin is encrypted, rights protected video.
Alex, you had a point there.
Yeah, I was just going to say, but what about, I mean, I know we're talking about major websites, but what about the legacy of, I mean, how many websites are out there? How many millions and billions of websites are out there? And it's okay for the big companies. It's okay for these, you know, the people at the BBCs because of, they've got geniuses like James to, you know, rewrite their websites for them.
Yeah, that's what they do.
For the you know, majority of, you know, mere mortals, I mean, I've written loads of websites over the years for people. And before, say 2 years ago, the majority of them used Flash in some way. Now, I'm not going to go back and rewrite all these websites for people. It's just not going to happen. And what Google, I mean, the thing is, Google are only doing exactly what Apple are doing. It's all being critical or we're being questioning, but Apple still support Flash on their desktops and not on their mobile devices, exactly as Google's moving over to. So they're only doing exactly the same thing. They've just got to be careful that they don't get sued for copying what Apple have done. But there needs to be some sort of legacy support. There needs to be some sort of HTML5 device, which will be like a compiler for Flash that will run in HTML5. So you've got the option to still use old websites. And maybe it will be CPU hungry, and maybe it will be RAM hungry. I don't know. But you must keep that enabled and for mobile devices in some way.
Adobe is marketing a product that's like that, but I think you're saying, Alex, that you'd like that on the user side. Adobe's making some kind of platform. I think it might just be their actual Flash. What is it called? Just like Adobe Flash Pro or something, whatever comes with the CS Creative Suite that lets you build things in Flash.
Yeah, I've got one now, and it's got an HTML. It's got something that converts Flash to HTML5 for you.
Right, exactly. So I think
that came out in CS5, I think.
What?
I think that came out in CS5. Yeah.
That sounds about right. Yeah. So yeah. They're still pushing Flash as a development platform that then sort of compiles on export to the various mobile platforms and runs natively or in HTML5 or runs to iOS, Android, or Windows. But sort of a write once export to anywhere as opposed to write once run anywhere in a virtual machine on the client side.
But what I'm saying is, say, maybe on the client side. So it'd be better on the client side, but I would like, say, an HTML homepage, if you like, which HTML5 homepage, which would filter the other site through it, and then it would do the Flash to HTML conversion maybe on the website. So you wouldn't have to actually rewrite every website that's ever been written in legacy, and it would actually do it for you. So it would play in the same way, but it would do the on-the-fly conversion for you. It would be nice if that bit of software ran on the phone, the pad, or the desktop, but at the very least, there should be some sort of patch, if you like, a homepage patch, which will run maybe through Adobe servers. I don't really mind where it runs through, but I think if you look at, I don't know how many websites, but I reckon 80% of the websites on the planet are using Flash. Yeah. And
50% of those will never be updated.
And 100% of the phones you buy now will not support Flash in the next few months. I mean, I was just checking. Windows Phone 7, surprisingly enough, doesn't support Flash, but it supports HTML5 in IE9.
Oh, right.
Well, that just about kills it then, other than BlackBerry, doesn't it?
Yeah, BlackBerry's going to run Flash. Maybe that's their new strap line.
We got to back away from wailing on BlackBerry, because I had a couple of emails this week. The people like the socks thing, and the fact that we tied up the socks thing, and that's why people like BlackBerry, but people were generally pissed off that we were wailing on BlackBerry. So, good story. I think it's interesting. I think it's got good implications for Adobe, certainly, and it's probably got some incredible implications for Chrome and for Android. But I just think Google are doing something in the back end. Google are doing something that makes it far better as an experience anyway, because at the moment, the best browsing experience on an iPad is without doubt Google Chrome. No,
I'm just going to very quickly throw
a quick... I agree with that.
Just a quick just a slow gentle ball into the batsman to carry on that dreadful allegory that was started earlier, sorry. Web apps, apps that you download, like, for example, you can buy iOS and Android phone apps, which effectively are basic web browsers, but have kind of customized HTML5 content. Are they potentially, rather than this kind of unstructured, type something into an address bar and load it up, what's the breakdown of casual surfing to application use, Facebook applications, Twitter applications, applications that give you certain data on a pop band or on a particular service that you use, the Tube Maps. I use a Tube Map application on my mobile phone, and I don't go to the London, you know, to the London Regional Transport, whatever, Transport for London web page. Is that the way that the phone manufacturers are intending to go?
Probably. Well, they have been moving that way for quite a while, including the beloved BBC Olympic app.
There you go.
No, I mean, well, that's the way it's been moving.
It's a skin for a website, really.
Yeah, that's all it is. Yeah, of course it is. Yeah. But, I mean, what they're doing is, it's nice because it's bundled up. I don't know what they're using. What is the browser? What's the basis of the browser they use?
It's probably the web kit. It's probably made from the kit of parts that gets us, the library, the libraries that are built into the operating system, and you basically select bits of that library and you present your page. Really, I mean, it's actually incredibly easy. You've got these things, I can't remember now, Titanium Brow, I think it's Titanium, is an application development kit for Android, Java and Apple iOS, and you can create your application based on that and then publish it to all these different platforms. It's amazing, really, how easy it is to generate an application. And I'm wondering if that's where people are trying to... I wonder how much more less time people are going to be spending using their browser day by day, and rather looking for an application that does what they want them to do on a regular basis.
Maybe the browser won't be a browser. It will just be a bookmarks link, if you like. You'll open up a library of applications which will work like browser bookmarks.
But of course, that comes back to your original point, Alex, that people aren't recoding their websites for this new mobile market. And I think maybe they are starting to.
Well, I think there was a good... I mean, the web show, if you haven't listened to the web show, give it a go, because, I mean, if you're into the web, it's geeky enough for that. But there was a great conversation the other week about adaptable design, so that your website... You know, you have one website that functions on each of the platforms that's presented to it. And one of the big stumbling blocks is the fact that the cost of that, because it's not something that's done as an outset. You ask for a web browser and you choose a mode of website that links with the browser that you're looking for. And then, if you want one for mobile, then the developer sells more for mobile rather than looking at adaptive design, which then... But there's more process within that adaptive design as well. And I'm not speaking as an expert. I learned all of that from listening to the web show the other week. But it's that there's an extra cost for integration that's an issue.
Yeah, I think there is a certain point in that. However, I think I remember somebody actually saying that on the show that to design, if you do it from the ground up, you know, literally start from scratch, you can actually do it in such a way that you don't do it any other way, and you just automatically do it that way, so that there's no cost to actually doing it. Once you get used to doing templates and everything else in the same way, where you do it like that, it should have naturally.
Yeah, people are basically just lazy, aren't they? They want a fast.
I'm reading a really good book about responsive design at the moment, and he actually says that it's actually fundamentally taking away and changing the way that you think of things. Not, you know, literally, you are doing it from the ground up. Not taking something you've got already and thinking, okay, now I'm going to make it do this. You've actually got to, you know, and if you do it that way, you should be able to do it so you can do everything in the same way. And it just changes your approach.
Yeah, but I mean, I've got some sympathy here, and Alex will have this as well, as a photographer. If you get asked to produce a brochure with small images that are cropped down to, you know, an inch across, you're not going to shoot that in RAW and start tinkering around with it. You're going to whack the JPEG setting down to 2 megabytes tops, shoot all of the things off that you've got. And when the client comes back and says, well, actually, I like one of those as wallpaper in me workspace. You're like, well, okay, but you didn't ask me for that. You asked me for a brochure. So if you want wallpaper, I'll come and shoot wallpaper. But you asked for a brochure. Well, it won't blow up. No, it won't blow up. Of course not. And there's a certain element of you then say, well, actually, you're being a bastard and screwing your client and taking the money off them unnecessarily. No, it's not. It's them asking me to shoot 500 images at a price, produce them, and give them to a printer to set into a pre-designed template and then produce a brochure. And he isn't going to be very happy with me if I send him a 16 meg image for 500 inserts. And equally, I'm not going to sit and process 500 images into 2 megabyte files. So it's not me ripping them off. And that's the thing with the web designer. If you're asking me for something that functions on desktop, I'll give you something that functions on desktop. Don't then come back and complain and say it doesn't function on an iPad because you didn't ask me to make it do that.
Funny, that's exactly what I had recently. I did one for someone as a favour, but I use, I don't know what I used, some template or other. And then I look back into the template when I'd had a big argument with him and asked him for a lot more money for redoing it. And I realised that there was an option to click and it would automatically tell whether it was on a desktop or a mobile device. And it would redo the website on the fly, if you like, for whatever site you wanted. So it actually put two sites on the same on the same web space, and it read what the device was. And if it read it was one device, it went to desktop. And if it read it was a mobile device, it went into mobile. That was quite good because I clicked one button and charged another £500 for it.
That is the web version of point and shoot right there.
Yeah, that is the traditional way of doing it.
But, you know, 500 quid and one click. And a lot of people having to thank me for doing it. I made it out. It took me weeks. And, but it is there. But to be honest, you're right. It is much better to build these things from scratch. But who's going to do that? Who's got time to do that? Or the inclination? It might be okay if you're doing it for yourself.
The point I'm making, Alex, is that it's the kind of thing that will change over time. You know, time, it may be that, you know, the way that you design stuff is completely with that in the mind. In the same way that we all have standards now when we're designing stuff, there's certain things we do because we've adopted that because there's a good reason to do it from something we've learned in the past.
Sure.
No. Right. It's just like being green or earthquake safe or hurricane safe or something. You know, you learn from one bad time and then you go forward from there.
Yeah. You almost do it without thinking.
And I think ultimately we have to throw our support behind the open and totally free standards because except for like the top four guys at the top, you know, Apple, Microsoft, Google, Adobe, you know, Flash versus Silverlight versus versus Air. You know, unless you're at the top and you're making an operating system or a development platform or something, everyone else down on that chain, from them branch out to developers, to users, to support people, to just all, you know, fourth at the top, infinite at the bottom. All these people at the bottom want it all to work and be compatible. And they don't want to have, you know, the developers in the middle don't want to have to buy 7 different platforms, development software kits to test it and make sure. No one should have to say to test on every different browser. I mean, the goal of HTML5 and web standards is literally, here's a tool everyone can have, a free standard, no cost, no patents, just use it, be happy, everyone collectively work together to improve it. And yeah, it happens slowly. That's why HTML5 is like set to finalize in like 2016 or something ridiculous. But you know, it's really functional.
IE6 client is gone.
It what?
And the last IE6 client has finally fallen off.
exactly. Yeah. but so you see, it's a slow progress, but it is a working progress. You know, a lot of HTML5, even though it's not standardized yet, it is available to use. And ultimately, it's better to have one thing that works everywhere that we can all share instead of having to buy, you know, a $500 software package in a different compiling environment and submit to different app stores and all this crazy stuff.
I know you said in the past, Eric, and I have exactly the same opinion, that HTML5 is the way to go, because as a software vendor, you can actually write an application and have it do it once, and it will work across all platforms.
There's
no issues about dependencies, because the browser takes care of all those things in terms of interpreting the HTML5. That's the whole point about having some standards.
Exactly. It's better for the developers. It's better for users. It's better for people trying to sell a piece of software and don't want to have to write it 12 different times for each different platform. The only people who are helped by proprietary standards are the guys selling that standard and selling an operating system or selling a browser or some kind of lock-in mechanism. So anything that avoids lock-in and lets more people use the most, more people use more software with the minimal amount of cross-platform working, that's a good for everybody.
Do you know who's really good at that, Eric? Europe is really good at forcing the issue. If you consider what they've managed to get Apple to do with their USB charging socket, that is a hell of a coup.
Well, we'll see. If it's just a rumor so far, but yeah, if they really come out with a USB, I think you're talking about the rumored photos. It might be doctored, we don't know, but the photos of the rumored iPhone 5 showing a little mini USB at the bottom instead of the iconic dock connector. If they really do that, then yeah, that'll be a huge victory for what you just said.
It's not micro USB.
What I just said, that Europe
it's unique. Yeah. I mean, we'll talk about it on the Mac show maybe tomorrow, but that connector I think is a 9-pin unique. I don't think it's...
Really?
I don't think it's micro USB. Not in the slightest. Not
That's just sense. Bonkers.
Well, micro USB is an absolute crap connection anyway.
It's useless. Because, it breaks easily. It doesn't carry enough.
The problem is when you insert it, it pushes the contactors down. And then as you push it in, the contactors go down. And if the contactors don't press against the input...
I've screwed enough of these cables in my time.
It's a science. Galaxy Note 10.1 inch has been revealed this week. The Galaxy Note sold 10 million units in its 5-inch. The Galaxy Note 10.1
really
is out.
I read the notes.
There you go, you should. Have a look at the Engadget. Thank you to Engadget for the picture. I have stolen it mercilessly. This was quite interesting. I mean, this is a 10.1 Exynos 4 chip, and it's got 1280 by 800 screen, 16 gig or 32 gig flavors, priced at $499 and $549. And you need a stylus for it. I don't think it makes calls, unlike the other Note. I've had a look through the story. And nowhere can I find anything that talks about call qualities and that kind of stuff. So,
No. I think you're talking about it's a 10-inch iPad sized tablet.
It's just a tab, yeah. The Note.
Why do they call it a Note then?
Exactly. There we go, you see. Now that's my point. The Note.
It's just like giving you a pen.
The Note always made calls. That was the key. The Note made calls. And then the tab made the tablet was no calls. They call this the Note for some reason.
Because it's got a pen.
Right.
Well,
So do you have to use the stylus?
No, you know, it comes with a stylus and it comes with a bunch of free apps to make use of the stylus, but you don't have
a sausage.
Right, so it's like the Galaxy Note then.
But you haven't got any fingers, you need a stylus.
thank you for piping up for our
Paralympics are coming up.
Yeah, coming up. Yeah.
Equal opportunity broadcaster.
Absolutely. I mean, what's the thoughts on this? I mean, we've had a look at the quick review here from Engadget, and it looks kind of nice. And the price is pretty keen as well. At 32 gigs, it's a little bit cheaper than the iPad at $549. Is it going to sell? I mean, they've got the 5-inch Galaxy Note has got a good sales profile at 10 million units. That's extremely good.
What's that selling at? Because that's obviously got a phone inside it, so it's going to have a load more... I really don't understand what they're trying to achieve with this.
I think that's 8 gig and $499, but that's off the top of my head. And I could
that's next to nothing. what has really thrown me this week is the announcement, and I know it's not confirmed, that $200 will buy you a 10.1-inch Microsoft Surface tablet running Windows 8.
I think the speculation is that they could do it, but I don't think they can.
Well, it was $1,200 last week.
Yeah, maybe they've missed a one-off the end of it.
Yeah. I mean, I think with the with that Microsoft thing, you're just going to have to wait and see, because of the, it's really funny because there's as much speculation about that as there ever was for any you know, new iPad, and what's the new iPad going to have, etc.
Just people, the vibe,
yeah, they want. People aren't actually worrying about what the thing can do. They're just jumping up and down to work out what the price will be. So I think Microsoft have got a bit of a coup here because they've out-appled Apple on this.
Anyone else?
Back to the Galaxy Note.
Exactly.
I think it looks incredibly ugly, personally.
Yeah,
it
looks
It isn't good, no.
And okay, I mean, whatever my personal views, why would you buy one of these over an iPad?
Right, you shouldn't. And I think that's the big thing, is that people...
really interesting, who don't really... 13-inch tablet.
That's the Archos one.
That's a mental size, that is.
Well, we'll come
that's
to
the
that.
Size of a small telly.
Thank you.
I want a 52-inch tablet.
Thank you for jumping ahead.
Well, I'm bored of the Note.
Is it called a horse tablet?
Oh, God. Yes, I mean, on top of that, just to finish off, James is leaping into the future there. There is a 13-inch/37-centimeter long tablet that's coming out from Archos. It's a family pad, unquote. What they're talking about? They're talking about 16 gig and 8 gig variants, 802.11n wireless, an A10 processor, carrying Android, but not with Flash, allegedly. And it's got USB ports and an HDMI out with front and rearward facing cameras. But it's 13 inches. I mean, it's the size of your MacBook Pro smallest version. So,
and it's probably like $1,200. I mean, that's what you get from all these guys trying to have a success to rival the iPad. Their solution is like the Samsung and all these guys. Their solution is just to throw these little headline features at the wall and see if they capture some kind of niche market. It's what we've seen with the phones, right? I mean, all those phones from HTC, whose big selling point was they had some kind of subwoofer that was like the size of a dime inside, you know, like and a kickstand and Dolby Surround virtualization, you know, these silly things that try to bring in customers and make them forget the fact that it has virtually no software ecosystem and no support and no people you can go to ask questions of or to help you if it breaks and you don't know what you're doing to fix it. You know, all of these things that make the Apple ecosystem so much more friendly to someone who just wants a tablet that just works and every software application that's available to them.
Don't you think that was the idea behind the Galaxy Note as well? Just to let's chuck this out.
Exactly.
Samsung just said, let's chuck out something between a phone and a tablet and just see if it gets any traction.
Exactly.
And it did. It absolutely has. I think that's one of the key features. If you look, there's a survey out this week that says, what do you want to see in the iPhone 5? And top of the list, bigger screen. Everyone's saying bigger screen. And if Apple's sitting there on a 3.8-inch screen, or maybe even if they're sitting on a 4.2-inch screen, they've got to sit and listen and go, ooh, what if people really do want a 5-inch screen, 16:9?
Yeah, I mean, if my Nexus S pack's up today, tomorrow, I'm going out and buying a Galaxy Note. I wouldn't even think about anything else.
But not a 10.1-inch one, because it can't make calls.
No.
I can't see a phone handset icon on it.
I don't.
It doesn't make calls.
Yeah, okay, that's a good point, but then I'll just get a cheap phone and tether to it.
The chat room's gone ballistic. Simon in the chat room wants a 27-inch tablet, so it looks like his iMac. 32-inch iPhones for everyone, says Bookery.
I think they're a bit bigger than handbags, Ewan.
Pete says, have a look on YouTube for the Samsung 3000. That may be an appropriate viewing, so if you're listening to this at work, I'd wait till you get it home.
Joking aside, though, if you get these tablets much bigger, why not? I mean, I don't know how useful Android is as an operating system, but if you want to build, you know, yet another walled garden, you know, as Apple have done, why doesn't somebody, even Google, forget about those Chrome tab thing or Chrome laptop things they put out, bring out a MacBook Air-sized touchscreen with a keyboard, you know, computer running Android. Because then you've got the whole walled garden, and, you know, there's no reason why you couldn't have a desktop-sized Android machine.
My netbook here comes with Android pre-installed on it.
Sure, but they're not making as much effort. I mean, they've got the phone. They're obviously going to you know, they're going to do well with the tabs. And some of these new ones that are coming out are, you know, they're definitely, they might not be iPad-esque, but they're great in their own right. They're missing a trick with the desktop market.
Go ahead, Eric.
Are you saying, Alex, why doesn't Samsung make a walled garden like Apple does? Because they're almost as successful as Apple, at least. I think they're like the next, it goes Apple, then Samsung, I think, for like the top phone sellers at this point, or at least for smartphones. You're saying they have the market share. Why don't they make a closed platform like Apple and make more revenue off of that?
Yeah, well, yeah, sort of. But with Google, I feel that they're not pushing Android enough in competition, because one of the things Apple are doing, especially with Lion, is they're bringing everything in. They're saying, right, if you buy an iPhone and an iPad, it's going to work seamlessly with your desktop machine, your laptop machine, your MacBook Air machine. So everything, the entire infrastructure is locked together. And I think Google, Samsung is a good partner, even TVs. I mean, why not get a really big jump on this Apple TV stuff? They've got it out there. Bring it out and lock it all down into one big environment.
Well, I was going to say, here's your answer. They're not a software company. They excel at doing very fast hardware iterations, very fast and cheap manufacturing, using, you know, every trick of the trade for the Asian supply chains and manufacturing chains. They're exceptionally good at that, possibly the best in the world, next to Foxconn and Apple and the people who use those other manufacturers. Sure. You know, Samsung has destroyed Sony and Panasonic. I saw an article about that in the Wall Street Journal the other day. You know, Samsung is Korean, right? South Korean?
Yeah.
Yeah, Korea especially has just come along and destroyed Japanese electronics businesses, the Sonys, the Panasonics, Sharps, all the ones that were in the 80s and 90s. And part of that is that they just have this intense focus on the hardware. They don't have the network that Apple has. They don't have an Apple store. They don't have the extensive network of phone support and people to review every app that comes into a store and do hands-on customer support. And, you know, it's the reason Apple can do the walled garden is because they have this whole other network of things that make it possible, not the least of which is the most attractive artistic-like hardware devices, where they make one device per year and really try to hone it down, you know, round off the edges to just make sure that it hits the largest market segment possible with a single product or two. Samsung, you know, they just like to throw things at the wall and see what sticks. You know, here's a stylus version. Here's one that has this and one that has that. And just see what the market
likes. That doesn't add up. Eric, that really doesn't add up, though, mate, because you're saying on one hand that Apple are making these fantastic products, but what components are they using inside their products? They're using Samsung's kit. They're buying out whole sections of Samsung to make these shiny bits of kit. And Samsung are going, oh, so we'll do our own thing. I'm really surprised that Samsung are even bothering making phones for the market, because they're probably absolutely coining it in. If they're not coining it in with Apple, I don't know why.
No, I don't. As a business, why wouldn't they do that? I mean, you know, you're going to put all your eggs in one basket in terms of the mobile phone market.
But they're generating into Apple are buying out the whole of a fab. A Samsung fab to buy to build components. Samsung are completely working from the ground up on brand new components for their own kit. That doesn't make any sense.
They may well be, but you know, as a global business, why would you put all your eggs in one basket? Apple might turn around tomorrow and produce something that's absolute pants, and it disappears down the.
Or I guess they may go to Sharp.
And you know, Apple have commissioned a huge amount and given huge orders to Samsung, but. You know, suddenly their market share disappears overnight in terms of actually the amount of components they're shipping. I don't blame them for wanting to go after that market themselves.
I'll put it around the other way, though, that Apple are entirely reliant on Samsung for their
product. Yeah, from that point of view, and it's foolish for them to do so.
I'm really glad I made that argument. What I was actually trying to say, though, was why don't Google, they make Android lovely, I think it's a wonderful operating system, why don't they go to someone like LG? There you go, another Korean.
How about Motorola? Yeah?
They're cutting back, aren't they? But if they go to someone like LG and says, okay, you make some lovely tellies, we want to develop an Android-based TV system that in some way is going to be compatible with our Android-based tablet system, and then go to some Luvano, I can't remember what they are, the Chinese manufacturers, is that what they're called? Anyway, you go to them and say, we want you to make Android-based laptop systems that are going to... So basically, Google don't have to make anything, but they have to redevelop the software so that it's all works on different devices, but it's all in its own, I can't think what the word is, you know, it's got its own environment. It will be an Android environment.
Ecosystem.
It will be an Android-based ecosystem, which, because of the amount of manufacturers and the amount of free licensing that goes on with Android, could really, really quickly eat into Apple's ecosystem, because that's basically how Apple keeps their strength up, because of everything talks, everything else within their environment. Now, I don't see why Google doesn't actually partner with... Right, Samsung seems to be doing really well with these tabs. You've got some really good phone manufacturers. You've got some really good TV manufacturers. You've got some really good laptop manufacturers. And I don't know why they're not making a bigger effort to build a complete ecosystem where everyone's invited, but they will all talk to each other. So it doesn't matter if you've got Samsung tablet and an LG TV, they will still talk to each other via Android.
I have a feeling, Alex, it's because they've got a huge amount of ground to make up against Apple.
As I think Sarah said, Samsung develops this, or am I sorry, it was Eric, literally overnight. Samsung starts from scratch, and within a couple of weeks, a couple of months, they've got some hardware out there.
A copy of Apple's.
Well, I want to show you something from earlier.
That was a joke, by the way, Samsung.
somebody was sharing, I think it was on the Mac show, was sharing an application called Fing, F-I-N-G. Brilliant application. I went on the Virgin Trains Wi-Fi connection, and I'm just going to hold it up to the camera. I don't know if you can see that. But almost every single device that I scanned on the local subnet was an Apple.
Why?
Isn't that crazy? They've still got a massive foothold. And that's because people know what Apple have already got that ecosystem because they're a single manufacturer. And it's going to take a lot for Google to be able to get HTC to do it their way, and Samsung to do it their way, and Sony, who make the Xperia, to do it their way, and Motorola, who haven't made anything decent for 15 years, to do it their way.
Well, but of the phone / tablet market, let's not forget that 10 million Galaxy Notes is a huge, huge proportion. That's very good.
Of 5-inch phones, yes.
I mean, well, no, not of 5-inch phones, but if you're talking about the larger, you know, stand that up against the S3, and okay, S3 is better, but it's a good proportion against the S3. Stand that up against iPhone, and iPhone for the last 12 months, that's a good proportion against iPhone. Stand it up against the iPad, and it's still a good proportion. 10 million's not bad against... It's a lot against 20 million iPad sales in the last 12 months. It's not bad at all. I mean, we've always had this conversation about what's the magic figure for pads. You know, is it 5 inches? Is it 7 inches? Is it 10 inches? Is it 13 inch? Now we can throw in as well. I think the thing that's happened this week is it's clearly identified there is no magic number for tablets. People want choice, and that's the key part. And that's where Apple, if they've got a 7 inch in the wings, have got to bring it out in the autumn, because people want to decide how they want to look at it. They don't want companies telling them how to look at it, which is why there's all these tablets around there and why something like the Note is selling. Because someone, you know, 10 million people are saying, I want the Note. And this is the key part, is you get a Galaxy S3, and you get a Galaxy S3 because it's free on a contract, and that's the end of it. If you're buying a Note, you're buying a Note. You're choosing a Note. You're not being sold it on a plan. You're looking at it and going, yeah, actually, I want the bigger device. I'm looking for that. I'm making a choice. And 10 million engaged purchases is worth 20 million, 50 million passive purchases on the S3.
Do you know, for me, why I'm so passionate about the Note? The one thing it has is its size, and that's about the keyboard. Biggest problem I have using my phone, every time I send a tweet, I have to turn it around landscape, because the keyboard is just a nightmare to use. It's so damn tiny. On a Note, it's actually half decent size. That's the biggest reason for actually having something that size. Okay, yeah, you said, as you said, as a phone, you look really stupid holding it up to your ear and stuff like that. But I'll quite happily put up with that for the sake of having something that's got a decent keyboard that I can use easily when I want to type a text message or a tweet.
I have to point out a couple of things. Okay. First of all, I think most people are not consciously choosing these devices, or if they are, they're not like well informed. They're asleep. Well, they're not no the well informed geeks like we're assuming they are, who are saying, well, I like Flash and I like Stylus and I like this exact screen size and I like the Android ecosystem. They're not saying that. The bulk of these sales are going to people who don't really know any better, and the sales guy pushes them towards this device because they get a higher commission, because instead of paying the $700 off contract Apple fee behind the scenes, they only have to pay Samsung, you know, $500 or something like that. There are all these other incentives and other reasons. I saw an article saying that people with a lot of prepaid plans, a lot of networks that don't have access to the Apple devices, that's another big reason driving the sales of these non-Apple smartphones. But the other thing I had to say, going back to the two guys at the top up there, Samsung and Apple pretty much sit on entirely separate ends of that Venn diagram. There's a little bit of overlap, but pretty much Apple does everything except the manufacturing, and Samsung does almost everything exclusively the manufacturing. The whole thing about it, the ecosystem of software, remember, ecosystem specifically means not just applications and DRM, but also movies, music, media applications like iTunes or Google Play or Amazon. It's also all these other deals with other content providers and other licenses, and this whole software and marketing and these big departments of all these things dealing with Hollywood and the record labels. Samsung, I don't know if they want to do that, but they don't currently. It's just not their business. It's not who they are.
Don't they send to Qantas or whatever it is?
Right. So Samsung has been more like a generic PC manufacturer, like a Dell. You know, they just make the hardware and then they expect someone else like Microsoft or Google to make the OS and build the ecosystem around it.
Do you know something that's also occurred to me about, you know, they've sold 10 million notes in the last 12 months. Given what you were saying about the fact that, you know, most people actually probably don't think about necessarily think about it. The fact that I think probably most people who are in a position where that they go into a store and they want to renew their contract or whatever, and the salesman shows this great big phone, they're thinking, if you're going to use that as a phone, you're going to think, no, I don't want that phone. It's way too big. But the fact that actually people are buying that or going for that option says to me, it's more about the fact that they're actually wanting exactly to type with rather than to use it as a phone.
No, I think
people aren't really using phones as phones anymore, are they?
Exactly, that's the whole point.
Yeah, I mean, I think that thing is a gaming platform, a viewing platform for video, which is the most
thing. Typing platform.
And then it says, oh, I don't know so much about the typing. I think there's definitely video viewing is people are. But what?
Yeah.
No one is buying a 5-inch note passively. They're engaged. They're saying, I want that.
Well, but it's also it's a choice to not buy an Apple device, which is the default position.
No, absolutely. if you don't, hang on a second.
Worldwide last year.
Let's just say if you plus. Say again, James.
I was just checking. Wall Street suggested there were 30 million sold in the first quarter of 2012.
30 million what?
iPhones.
Right.
That's in a quarter. So that's like 12 times as many Galaxy Notes. Okay, so it's a specific phone and a specific device with a specific form factor. And the reason it's a specific device and a specific form factor is because it's the only one of its kind. And therefore, it is statistically significant for that form factor. But as far as a choice of device goes, I'm still not quite sure it's statistically significant. I shall have to stop saying that.
I think it's a lot.
But I've only ever seen one.
What?
I've seen more than one, but
I've seen truckloads of Galaxy S3s, loads of the little buggers.
Yeah, but let's also remember, I think part of the reason that you're seeing a lot of these non-iPhone, non-iPad smartphone sales, tablet sales, is because a lot of these guys at like the Verizon stores, the AT&T stores, there are many factors that cause them to push customers towards one or the other. You know, Verizon and AT&T, as much money as they make off the iPhone, they still don't really like it. They don't like the fact that once you buy it from Verizon or AT&T, they basically hand you off to Apple and Apple takes care of you. You have a problem, you go to Apple. You want an upgrade or something to do, you go to Apple. You very rarely, I think people know that when they buy an iPhone, they're going to Apple's side. They don't think, well, this is a Verizon phone or an AT&T phone. Whereas Samsung sells itself a lot closer to a white label device where if you have a problem with your Samsung device, you go to Verizon or you go to AT&T. And that's what those guys like. They never liked that branching off to Apple because it really hurts their position as a value added reseller. They don't want to be dumb pipes. They don't want to be dumb airwaves. I think they should be, but that's a separate issue that they don't want to be. So I'm just pointing out that's driving their business reason too. Samsung may also be cheaper a lower cost, a lower non-subsidized cost. Like I said, you know, Apple gets like $800 per iPhone. But besides that, they're much more of a, they play friendly better with the networks, and the networks like that.
Yeah. Good conversation. Good conversation. Thank you. This podcast and all the others would not be possible without UK2. We have a great relationship with them. We've extended it for another 2 years. They're supporting us quite happily. Anything we need for the web, they just supply it. They're great, good, dandy. They'd supply you as well if you wanted. All you've got to do is go to our website at britishtechnetwork.com and then click on the link for UK2. They know we sent you. And then go back to our page, because it'll open in a new tab. Go back to our page, look up on the sponsors link, and then there's a whole pile of codes in there. Take the codes, stick them in the browser when you bought stuff in the basket, and you could wipe your account out. You could have zero charge at the end of it when you finished buying stuff from them. They're great. Anything for web, you're talking about hosting, DNS, VPN, VPS, dedicated hosting or shared drives, those kind of things. Anything you like, they're perfect. Give them a go, uk2.net, but go to our website first if you could. Even if you just want to sign into your account, please use ours, because they know that we've sent you. Thanks to them. We really appreciate their support and sponsorship, and looking forward to spending another 2 years supporting them, because they deserve it. And thanks to you guys for buying off them, because you really are. Right. Do we have any cool things? Mr. Hart, do you have any cool things?
I do. Last weekend, I took my family for our annual holiday. It was only a short one this year, because we've got a load of sort of other things going on. My boy's gone to scout camp and stuff like that. And we did Legoland, Chessington and Thorpe Park in 3 days. It's not something I'd recommend to anybody, especially with Thorpe Park being bloody scary. I found an app. Because on all these places, you get this little scrolling LED display outside saying estimated time to wait, and 60 minutes, 30 minutes, 50 minutes. If you go early in the morning, incidentally, the queues are often really tight. You get straight onto your favourite rides. And so I was browsing idly for applications, and there's something called Ride Hopper Free, and it links in, I believe, to these systems and gets the estimated waiting time for a ride. Now, I don't know how accurate it is, how up to date it is, and I'd be very interested for people to try find it, because it's got it for Thorpe Park, Chessington. I think it's got 15 different amusement parks in the US, UK, but absolutely loads in the US as well. And it's a really interesting. I think it's quite an interesting guideline to work out what ride you want to go to next for the one that has the fewest queues, especially in summer when the queues can be up to 2 hours. Absolutely, mad. Why on earth someone would wait in a scalding heat for 2 hours to go on a ride that lasts a minute and a half? I just don't know, but we bloody did.
Well, I can say they do, absolutely. Ride Hopper's free, it's in iTunes as well. And I used the, we went to, what do you call it, Holden Towers recently with Aaron Claydon, at Aaron Claydon on Twitter. And their application tells you the ride times and the wait times, and it's very accurate. It's very good.
I don't know. Yeah, worth a go.
Must do it with some sensors or photo eyes or something. But
this is the point. The whole point. I guess I was making earlier, that if you want to find out something, you don't have to keep browsing into a website to find it every time. If there's an app on your phone, you can click on very quickly and estimate it spot on. And that I quite like.
Good, excellent choice, sir. Alex, we can come back to you if you.
No, I've got something. Okay. I have. It's well, it is tech related, because it's DVD, right? I often buy crap. We all know that. Today, I had delivered for my little boy, who has been so good lately because I've been busy, and he's been really kind and coming to work with me, which must be really, really boring, but he's been really well behaved. And as a little present, I said he's going to get paid. And so I bought him something, and it got delivered to Dad. And you can see this, and I've no idea because there's a thing.
Down a bit,
because it hasn't appeared on my screen yet. Okay. What it is, it's a Hanna-Barbera DVD box set for cartoons. Now, one of the reasons I think this is important for people of our age is because it's all cartoons that we remember, which is far more important. So it's like getting your children addicted to...
Hong Kong Fruity on the front there.
Yeah, well, I'll just tell you what it's got, right? It's got the Flintstones, it's got Wacky Racers, Volumes 1 and 2, Dastardly and Muttley, Volumes 1 and 2, The Perils of Penelope Pitsop, Top Cat, Volumes 1 and 2, and Hong Kong Fruity, Volumes 1 and 2, right? And I got that on Amazon for £20.
Oh wow,
that's a lot. That's a lot of viewing.
I know, and I just thought, you know what? We can get rid of all that rubbish he watches now. He's going to watch proper cartoons. And it also means that when he asks me to sit and watch cartoons with him, I'm not going to even argue anymore.
Do you know the Flintstones? I saw the Flintstones on Cartoon Network. It is remarkably violent and aggressive.
You know what?
A miserable bugger.
We watched the first episode of the Flintstones today, and it started off with him hitting Barney Rubble over the head with a hammer. And also, what I didn't realise is, you know that wonderful theme tune? Well, that wasn't in the first series. It's a bit like Fools and Horses. They must have changed it after a series or so, because it didn't have the theme tune.
It is.
I was singing it, and it never turned up. I couldn't believe it.
It's 10 discs, and the cheapest I can get it is 26 quid at the moment.
Oh, I got it for 20, but you know, it's brilliant.
Well done. $22.69, sorry, at play.com at the moment, but don't worry for play.com because they're arseholes.
That's put a bit of a downer on my pick, but there you go.
No, absolutely. I agree entirely. I think Hong Kong Fury never was a super guy. Absolutely.
Indeed. I've got the DVD downstairs.
Quicker than the human eye.
Same as that. Yeah, indeed, yeah.
Sarah, what do you have for us, Mrs.?
I haven't got a cool thingy, but I've got lots of work in progress at the moment. So watch this space.
Tease.
Well, I'm sure people are on the edge of their seat with that one. Thank you, Sarah. Eric, what have you got for us, mate?
A new version of Ubuntu.
No,
I'm going to top that letdown with a bigger letdown and say I've got zilch, nothing.
Ah, Jesus. Pathetic. I've got one, and I've got one courtesy of Mr. Gordon Jackson. And Steve,
how did your shoot go?
It was great. We went out and we had a lot of fun up and down the Seven Valley Railway, and a few little things came up, and a few bits of advice were given. I don't know whether they felt like they learned anything, but they paid for me on the train. What did he say to you then, Alex?
I was going to say, what did they teach you?
I don't know, but they asked me loads of questions, and I made up some good answers on the spot. But as a gift for doing it, they gave me a wallet for my iPad, and it's cool. I haven't put my iPad in it yet, but it's zippable, so that helps. Alex, stop messing with your mic, and you stick your iPad in the back. There we go. I haven't done it yet, though. And it's got a wallet thingy and stuff like that, so you can carry it around with your credentials and your credit cards.
Do they have a space for a giant driver's license?
It is a huge driver's license, potentially.
Space shuttle driver's license. But
it was a gift from there.
No, you can't.
Giant novelty MasterCard.
It only fits 10. It only fits the iPad 2 and 3, and it's from Happy Old Studio. I've got no idea how much it costs because it's a gift, and I don't want to find out. Thank you very much. But thank you to Gordon and Steve for buying me that. And giving me for taking them around today. There we go. And that's cool because they bought it. So stick that up your backside then.
Oh, I bought a gift from my 9-year-old son, and it's better than yours.
It is. Oh, well, no. Sorry, Steve. No, sorry. Sorry, Gordon. It's not. Absolutely. But it's cool. No question. It's a cool thing. Where can we get a hold of you, Mr. Hart?
Well, if you're in Salford in the next hour and a half, I'm up for a pint. Otherwise, SYZYGY on Twitter.
How long are you in Salford for, dude?
I'm over tonight, and I've got some interviews tomorrow, then I'm heading home around about 5:30, so can't stop.
Safe journey, sir.
I hope you get the job.
Foxy, where the hell are you?
I'm at home. Yeah, James, make sure you don't bring him home with you, because I won't be able to open the door. You are taking home Salford keys, aren't you? Boom, boom. Right, I'm Alex Fox.
Thank you very much, mate. Sarah, where are you? Oh, we got a mid-gulp.
You can go to me on the Twitters at SarahJaneUK.
The chat room's already making up who we are in the Flintstones.
Yeah, I'm Penelope Crystal, apparently.
Well, you're Velma, which is from Scooby-Doo. So,
that's true. But I was Penelope Pitstop earlier on.
Alex is Barney Rubble. That may be closer than you know. James is Dick Dastardly. And Eric is Bam Bam. Do you even know who Bam Bam is, Eric?
So you got to be Fred then.
Yeah.
That's Fred.
I don't know half those other characters, though.
Oh, I'm going to send you a box set of Hanna-Barbera.
No, I want one.
The chat room hasn't come up with one for me yet, so I'll have to go.
You're Fred Flintstone.
Well, you're definitely Fred Flintstone. There wasn't even any question about that.
I can do... Hey, Fred! I can do a decent Barney Rubble, but if it's the case, then we'll see you next week.
Well!